Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
Later on tonight, RT2. Another installment of the Reality Bites documentary series called The Verminators. It'll make for grisly viewing. For the first time, cameras have gone behind the scenes to look at what happens in a day in the life of Rentokil Pest Control as they rid Ireland's homes and businesses of nasty invaders, from rats to cockroaches to mice to bedbugs and on. John McGee is one such verminator. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you, sir?
You're the verminator.
I'm the verminator.
The verminator. Don't mess with me, cockroach.
Did you check underneath that kitchen sink this morning when you got up?
Why should I?
Did you hear that noise?
Why should I? What could be there?
These are the questions that we're always asked. These are the phone calls we get all the time. What is it I'm finding? What is this thing? Please help me out. I'm at my wit's end.
And what is the most typical phone call you get?
By and large, it would be rats and mice. But it depends on season as well. We're coming into a season at the moment now of ant flies, bees and wasps. But still, they don't go away. The furry friends are always there. They're not hibernating. You know, they might have gone and they found a new source of food somewhere else. So they might not be just there in full sight, but they're there. They're waiting to come back.
Is that expression that you're never more than 6 feet away from a rat true, would you say?
Absolutely. Have a look around you now.
What I mean, I don't mean the human ones, I mean the...
On the ground, yeah, absolutely. There's a quite an abundance of them. Again, it depends on the food source, the reasons why they're enticed into the area. We enticed them in. If there was no people in the world, there'd be no rats in the world. There wouldn't be anybody there to leave food in it. There wouldn't be any bad housekeeping.
So what makes one house more attractive to rats than another?
Well, really, it could be the locality of where you are. You could be next to maybe a refuse dump. Mm. You could be living next to, something as simple as, let's say, even neighbours leaving dog food at night time, a dog bowl of water. I mean, that's a feast to a rat. They'll come in at dead of night when we're all asleep, nibbling away at what's left over during the day. And obviously then, if it starts to get cold, they're looking for a bit of harbourage and heat. So they'll find a way into houses that are vulnerable, which might have little cracks and crevices here and there that you might not even see because you wouldn't have noticed it.
Water.
It's up to the top of the roof. Water.
Rivers.
Absolutely.
Lakes.
Yeah. Well, rats have to drink 50% of their body weight in water every day.
God.
So good water sources. Absolutely.
Yeah. You might have 50% of their body weight.
In water. That's true. So they're always on the lookout. They're always thirsty. They're always looking for a new clean source. But, not too far away. You did right. Absolutely.
What's the best way of keeping rats at bay?
Ring 1-890-300-400.
Yes. Ring you guys.
Yeah, Rentokil, obviously. Well, listen, we are the market leader. But, you know, the best, I mean, at the end of the day, there's no DIY really method. It is a professional approach that needs to be taken. It's all very well where you might try the DIY approach and, you know, try and do it yourself. It's only going to stave them off for a very short period. You might overdose, you might underdose. So it's protection from the outside, bait boxes inside and outside, a monitoring system, which basically gives us kind of areas of the tools of the trade that we have in the form of, let's say, tracking dust.
Yeah.
You know, we would put down an ultraviolet tracking dust, and that will lead us to areas where we see them probably coming from, and that will tell us why they're in the area. So we'll use all of those efforts to keep them away.
Somebody wants to know: Do those plug-in things keep? Are they good to keep the mice out?
You know what? What's it going to do? Did it ever work? I've been in situations in people's attics where they've been plugged in, and the mouse was dead under the plug,
yeah.
And it wasn't the plug that killed it. And if it wasn't meant to get that far, well, then how did it get that far? So, I mean, the money spent on that, you would be better off just picking up the phone and ringing
you guys. Okay, 51552, questions about this might be useful for John. Could you ask John how to get rid of flies in the attic? They've set up home, maybe 60 or 70. Marion Limerick wants to know.
It really depends on the type of fly that it is. More than likely, if it's around this time of the year, there could be what's known as a cluster fly. Now, the cluster fly is different to your normal common house fly. They lay their eggs outside, so there must be something outside attracting them to the attic. Are they living in the countryside? Are they...
Yeah, Limerick, it doesn't say city or country, but possibly city.
Okay. There could be something close by. There could be a manure heap. There could be maybe a field that's been fertilised with, obviously, manure and fertiliser. And that's a good encouragement for them to lay their eggs, because the eggs hatch out then in the larvae, which feed off earthworms. Okay. And then the route their way up through the soil and then make their way towards them. Bright-coloured buildings, with buildings that are painted white, south-facing, you have a lot of that. So they're attracted over to the building, they get the sun shining on it, make their way into the roof, into the cavity space, and then you'll see them all dead around windowsills and Velux windows trying to find their way back out again.
Yeah.
But that's more than likely could be, but then again, it needs to be surveyed to be able to pinpoint exactly what it is. And once we've identified the insect, then that's half the battle. We have the tools to try to finish the job off, you know?
You know the ones that sound like drone airplanes, or not even drones, just like the World War II bombers? They're like blue bottles or something. You know those ones?
Are these the ones in the attic now, or are these
No, you might see, they might get into your bedroom or your kitchen sometime, and they make all this noise, and you open the window, and they've all the space to get out, but they go everywhere except out. And you go, come on, I don't want to kill you.
It's, well, you know, it could be a blue bottle. If it's one solitary fly on its own that size, shiny blue back, bouncing its head off the window trying to get out, it could be a blue bottle.
Just a tick. It's a tick fly. It's, you know, it's a really stupid fly.
He's a stupid fly. Shoe fly, don't bother me.
Get out.
He's around. He's there for a reason. Has he been born of something dead that died in the air, under the floorboard behind the wall cavity in the attic? Who knows? Could be a dead rodent somewhere.
Yeah.
More than, if it's a blue bottle, that needs to be investigated. So it would lead to probably that.
You often see stories in papers, and they love to print a picture of a bed bug, but to make it look like Jurassic Park, you know, like, but we can't see them. So here's the thing with bed bugs. Anytime I see a story about bed bugs, they talk about that they will come and get you in the night. It's like the day of the Triffids or something. The fact of the matter is, we can't see them, and yet we still go to bed and we put our heads on our pillows, and they're not. We're told they're there. So ignorance is bliss sometimes, isn't it?
It is. But the first thing you need to be looking for, though, is the look at yourself. You got to check yourself. This is the first sign. You'll see bites on your skin the next day, maybe a day or two afterwards, but you will start to see them. You're not likely to see them in their early stages because these are very elusive insects. They're as thin as a credit card. They can fit into the smallest little cracks and crevices down behind skirting boards, under floorboards, behind picture frames, the tops of curtains, in the seams of mattresses. So they're very, very elusive. And they're very small when they're born first. So they've got five stages of life to grow. And each time that they grow, they shed a skin. They're signs as well that you need to look for. Small little kind of carcasses. It's like a see-through piece of fingernail. And then they need to feed each time that they go through this state of instar, which is a growth, a level of growth. But your body is the first sign. That's exactly where what you'll find first of all. You know, and they will stay close to the food source, which is you. So you are the host with the most. You know?
Well, the host with the most comes to mind because of the ant story, the Pharaoh ant. Listen, if you have a minute, if you're about to get out of the car, don't.
Oh.
Because this story is the freakiest story I've heard for a long time. It involves two newborn twin babies and a colony of ants. Go.
Yeah, right. Okay. I got called to a situation in Leinster, and basically the lady had found these small, tiny little cream-coloured insects on her kitchen counter. So called out, seen them straight away, could identify them as the Pharaoh ant. Not like a regular ant, not like a black garden ant. But had a look around the apartment she was in. She was on the fourth floor, I think it was, and I needed to find a food source. I needed to find where they were foraging from. But anyway, I found a couple of bits and pieces. There was some sugar spilled and there was some lemonade spilled on the top of the counter, and they were teeming around it. But I did find another source from the bathroom. It was an ensuite, and in the same ensuite bathroom was the bedroom where the two children were sleeping in the cot, side by side, twins only home from hospital. So I had a look around and I found a line of ants, and it started to go across by the side of the skirting board up to the leg of one of the cots, over across the pillow onto the child's face, and then the line of ants was actually taking protein from the saliva from the newborn baby.
No. And
there was another one crawling up the other side of the other child's face in the other, and they were taking whatever protein they could from the baby's eyeball. Yuck.
Like his tear ducts, was it?
The tear duct from whatever, and I could just, like, one would go in, take a piece away, and there was another one waiting in line just take more and take more.
That they is, would have it's sent like out something out of Tales of the Unexpected or something.
Yes, I can just hear the music now.
Ding, 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 ding. An aunt calls for tea. Roll down. So do those ants cause, I mean, are those ants, I don't know if it's a silly question, but are they dangerous in there? Like, do they have germs? Are they dirty? Are they? I mean, no one wants an ant in their child's tear duct, but you know what I mean.
No, of course, absolutely. They're not. There's so much a pest that they can get into foodstuffs and storage. They can spoil foods. They're a nasty pest to look at. Who wants them crawling around on the sugar bowl? Obviously, exactly. You know, you're coming down to have your breakfast. You know, it's carrying diseases and that sort of thing in an abundance, but a lot of them together, I suppose they would. But you know, the Faroe ants themselves, they're a very organised colony.
Yes.
Of insects. They come from a family of insects called Hymenoptera, which include ants, bees, flies, and moths.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll look for forage, they'll take food, and then they'll actually go and put their little colonies, their excrement in small little mounds. So they're well organized. They have a hierarchy, you know, they're very intelligent.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for a film called Ant-Man, based on the Marvel comic superhero with Paul Rudd as Ant-Man, and the trailer for, you should watch it actually, given your knowledge of ants, because it's very respectful towards ants, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah, it is.
Okay. I'm trying to get a part number two.
Yeah, yeah. They might see you as a threat, actually. That's the only problem. Let's talk to, I'm going to throw a load of texts at you, John, and if you can give us a kind of a brief enough answer, because there's so many of them, as if you can. But there's great interest in what you're saying today, so that's good. Tina says, could you ask John about wood lice, please? They're all over the house. I thought they were gone last winter, but they're back again for the last couple of months. We live in Dublin.
Yeah, wood lice are a tricky one too. You'll find them behind old peeling wallpaper, down at the skirting boards, underneath the foundations, let's say, at the front of the back window. Generally, pest control is a tricky one with this. There are residual treatments that can kind of keep them at bay. You're never going to totally get rid of them completely, though. They're more, again, old houses, places with weak foundations. I associate them with rocks and stones and pebbles. Let's say, for instance, you might have a feature running around underneath the front window. And part of a recommendation would be just to take it back a couple of inches, you know, put soil in its place and take the stones, because they're living in the stones, under the stones outside. And by and large, when they come in, the atmosphere and the temperature in the house is not good enough to sustain their life, so they naturally will just upend themselves and die anyway.
Mm.
But there is a chemical treatment which keeps them at bay, and it's successful, but it's continued on, and usually a couple of times a year would help, you know. But it's all about looking to see where they're coming in from. You could try to proof down at the skirting boards, if you like, you know, with a bit of you know, we can get a property care team to come in and seal the house up for you.
Sure.
But it's a tricky one. They don't last long indoors. They're mainly an outdoor insect.
If insects were people, I always thought wood lice were like World War I veterans, and I would have had them as like David Lloyd George or something. That's all. That's in my head. I need to get it out.
Little armadillos with the shell on their back.
It was a terrible time. It was a terrible time. I'd rather not talk about it. Now, how do you
keep... We'll get them in the trenches.
We'll find them in the cracks in the wall. We'll find them outside in the moss.
Monty, park up that jeep.
Exactly. No, you haven't. All right. How do you keep wasps away from the garden or the kitchen?
Okay. The reason they're probably in the kitchen, at least anyway, first I'll tackle that one, is there could be a nest close by.
Ah.
More than likely, it could be in the eaves of the attic of the roof. It could be even in the shed outside. These things, obviously, then they'll swarm and get bigger as summer goes on. The bigger the nest, the more noticeable the nest. But then again, in its early stages, you're not going to see really one or two just come and go, because it's totally unnoticeable to you. So it's when they get larger in numbers, when the nest gets bigger, that's when you need to do something about it. But like, a swarm of them could be in the garden shed, as I said. It's nestled itself underneath the inside of the roof in a dark area, which is away from usual kind of human contact. And a gust of wind could easily blow them towards the window. But they're curious as well.
Yeah.
And they're buzzing in around. Very hard to get out, just like our old friend, the blue bottle as well, hanging its head off the window.
Come on. What are silverfish, and why is everyone texting in about them?
All right. Silverfish too. Yeah, we get a silverfish are, I suppose, all year round, really, too. We get a fair amount of calls in relation to people that might have had problems with damp. high humidity, condensation. There might have been an event, I mean, in a flood. Maybe they're new in the property and have inherited it because there was a flood beforehand. But these silverfish are enticed up around drain systems, in around sewer pipes, again, in around the back of the toilet bowl where the main line flushes down into the main system. They'll crawl up around that. Proofing is a good way to tackle it, to try, but you would need residual treatments to keep the amount of them down. Silverfish last for about 8 years, each individual insect. There's about 500 offspring from one individual insect as well. And once they start to migrate from the bathrooms, that you can start to see them then in areas like the sitting room carpet, in around the back of the TV, underneath the window ledges. But it's treatable. Certainly is, absolutely, and it's something that Rentokil pride themselves in taking care of, because it is a big problem, especially in apartments that are prone to condensation, damp, and humidity.
All right, we have to leave it there, but we must get you in someday, because you've struck a chord with our listeners. They like what you're saying, and they have loads of questions for you. So come and see us in the next month or two if you have time.
I will indeed. And before I go, look at www.rentokil.ie.
Yep.
It's your only man.
That's your only man. All right. Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan. Take
all the
care.
Best. That's John McGee. The Verminators, a reality bite, probably literally in this case, documentary. It's on tonight, Wednesday night. Yes, 9 o'clock on RTE2.